Turkey hunting is one of my favorite things. And one of the key tools I use for turkey hunting is the Onyx Hunt Map. I use it incessantly when I'm hunting turkeys. Being able to find a new piece of public or gaining permission on private opens up opportunities for gobblers. Onyx Hunt has a special offer for you this spring. Use the code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. You'll find more birds this season. I'm telling you, I rely on Onyx Hunt when I'm hunting turkeys. It is an invaluable turkey hunting tool.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you're 21 or older, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. You can order nicotine pouches online. They ship directly to most states, or check out their store locator to purchase pouches at thousands of retail locations around the country. Black Buffalo Tobacco Alternative, bold flavor, full pouches. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults age 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco.
This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
The Meat Eater Podcast is brought to you by First Light. Whether you're checking trail cams, hanging deer stands, or scouting for elk, First Light has performance apparel to support every hunter in every environment. Check it out at firstlight.com. FirstLite.com. Hey, this is Steve coming at you through my phone instead of through Phil's fancy recording equipment. I'm here to tell you that now is your chance to rock some sweet new apparel from Meat Eater. You got to go to store.themeateater.com and get 40% off your favorite hats, t-shirts, and hoodies now through Christmas. We got new trucker hats with original elk, whitetail, moose, and bison designs by our very own resident genius, Hunter Spencer. We've got those soft, buttery, heathered t-shirts, the kind you put them on, they feel real nicey-nice, like they're you had them a long time, but they're still in great shape, and they're real soft. You know the ones. We got them in javelina, fungi, and bear-eating a fish designs. We've got awesome heavyweight hoodies, including the Bear Grease hoodie. So, t-shirts and hats, $15. Hoodies, $30. Get yours now, again, at store.themeateater.com. I will see you out on the streets or in the woods rocking your new tees and hoodies.
On the subject of sharing soap, sharing a bar of soap, Spencer... Are you familiar with the quote, you can't stand in the same river twice?
No.
You get it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because
who said that?
Just people.
Just the water's just always moving by.
I mean, I bet you it's not even, it's so widespread. I bet you it's not, you'll probably find where someone says that Mark Twain said it, because that's what happens with every good quote that no one knows who said it. But you can't stand in the same river twice, meaning the water is gone, right? I don't think you can bathe with the same bar of soap twice. You'll notice if you watch one over time, it gradually shrinks.
Sure.
If you took your
Heraclitus.
He did not. Really? Okay.
That's the first.
You're not saying it right. I don't know how to say it right, but that ain't right.
Yeah.
It's my best effort.
So, if you took a bar of soap and put it in your privates,
mm-hmm.
and then Yanni's like, hey, can I borrow your bar of soap? It's by the time it comes back to you, it's not that part.
This isn't a hypothetical.
Sometimes, though, Sometimes you grab a piece of soap and there might be a couple pubes stuck on there or something, though.
Yeah, but they're clean.
Yeah, that's true.
They're all washed off. This is the second show we've ever done on a tour bus. The first one we did was, I don't want to say it was a nicer tour bus, but do you remember what I'm talking about, Yanni?
With Luke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did a show on the tour bus.
Yeah.
We're on our tour bus. It's over now by the time you get this because when we're going to release this episode, but we're on a 8-city tour going across, starting in, on a live tour, starting in Denver and basically moving across a latitude, more or less, with some deviation, moving in an eastward direction across roughly the same latitude, ending at the coast in near, you know, near coastal in Philadelphia. And we're doing this in a tour bus. And I had sleeping in my berth last night. I woke up one time in the middle of a nightmare that someone was shaking my tent because the bus was shaking.
That's interesting. I didn't have that, but I was trying to use the same techniques that sometimes I use when I'm in a tent and the wind is blowing like crazy and it's kind of keeping you up, mm-hmm. and you sort of just have to accept that that's what the night is going to be like and just be like, that's part of my sleep tonight, and sometimes I can just accept it and then fall asleep. And I was trying to tell myself that with the rocking that kept waking me up.
Yeah, and the bumps.
But it never worked.
Hard sleep in tour bus.
I had a bad experience.
Yeah,
I'll leave it at that.
I thought that like half his podcast would be us discussing our last night's sleep.
Phil and I already figured out how we're going to fix you tonight.
Oh, Phil, what are you going to do?
Phil's going to wake up crying about 2, and you can get up and rock him. Right back to sleep. That's what you're used to, man.
That's true. Yeah.
Brent Reeves. Oh, go ahead, Spencer.
One of the best parts, though, about last night's sleep was how dark it got.
Oh, that's
man,
why I slept
I
so
couldn't,
late.
I couldn't see my hand in front of my face.
Yeah. I didn't wake up till 10 because I was just waiting for the sun to come up.
Well, if you notice that these bunks are set up not how they're normally. There's supposed to be 3 bunks. I don't have access to the light switch from the top bunk. So there was a light on from Hannah's. She could shut it off below, but I didn't have access to that switch. So I had a light on in my cabin the whole night.
All night?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Are you sure?
It was just
100%. I'll show you after this podcast.
It was just Chester's follies. He also fumbled his phone to the bunk below him.
Yeah, you can see that bunk right there?
About halfway through the night.
Yep. So there's a switch on. Go on down below, Yanni.
You're talking about that light I just turned on?
Nope, the bottom bunk.
Okay.
There's a switch on top. The top switch. Turn that on and then go look at my
bunk. Why didn't you talk to your berth mate?
I don't
because
see a
I
light
already
on
felt
it.
Bad because
I don't see a light on in there.
I feel like your
no,
birth
the top
mate,
one.
A birthmate sounds like your twin.
Yeah,
talk to your birthmate.
Because I already felt bad because I dropped a cell phone on her head.
And something else,
it
right?
Slid through that crack down oh, into the bottom bunk.
Oh, the one behind under your pillow.
Yeah.
Chester
yeah,
emerged.
You can cover that up.
Chester emerged from his bunk at 10 a.m. He said he didn't sleep for a second.
I mean, that was exaggeration,
yeah, no,
for
that,
sure.
That's not true.
But I didn't, I barely got any sleep.
Who snores?
No one is quiet as a mouse.
Yeah, that surprised me.
I do snore, but I don't think I could,
their throat.
I couldn't achieve a deep enough sleep to like get to snoring, I don't think, on this bus.
Brent Reeves is here.
I was impressed how you don't hear any vehicles going by you. Did you hear any vehicles go by? I mean, we can't be driving above the speed limit, so it must be cars passing us all night, and you don't hear them. Mm. So the soundproofing is impressive.
Joined
day
by Brent
Reeves.
Where
are you going to be, Steve? In a rush.
Joined today by Brent Reeves, who did not sleep on the bus last night, but he had 30 years in law enforcement, and I asked him if he ever raided a bus, to which he said yes.
Yeah, we were actually invited onto the bus.
Oh.
Tom T. Hall was playing in a little town in Bradley County.
So you were joking about raiding the bus.
Yeah, we were joking. We probably looked, if we looked very hard, we probably could have found something, but.
Turned it into a raid.
Yeah, it was, I don't know where they would have put it though, because it was beer, ice chest full of beer from one end of that bus to the other. I don't know where they slept, if they stood up or whatever, because it was just cases and cases of beer.
Huh.
If I had an illegal substance on this bus, do you think you could find it?
Sure.
Think so? With what level of confidence?
the amount of level of pain that I inflicted on you. No, I'm just okay. kidding.
You put a dog on it. You ever watch Tales from the Tour Bus?
Yes, I have seen that.
So, you know, the dude that made, what's that? The cartoon, the Texas cartoon, Mike Judge?
Oh, yeah.
King of the Hill. So he made a whole series about the outlaw country era.
Turtle Soup?
Yeah. He gets into how Johnny Paycheck shot a man in an argument over turtle soup.
Yeah.
He gets into how Waylon's manager shot Waylon's bus driver in an argument over hamburgers.
Yeah, he blew up a barn.
Yeah. So in Tales from the Tour Bus, there's a guy talking about when Willie Nelson's tour bus, they put a drug dog on Willie Nelson's tour bus. And it's supposed to find the weed and sit down. They're talking about how that dog just came up the steps and sat down.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. No, you could. I mean,
so talk about the guy whose bus you ran, because he wrote Harper Valley PTA. Who's going to feed them hogs?
Yeah, Tom T. Hall. He wrote a lot of the. He was called the storyteller, and he wrote a lot of songs that, you know, for other people. But he had a lot of good songs. The Ballad of $40, where he's the song starts out, it's one of my favorites, but he starts him and two other guys got hired to dig a grave,
mm-hmm.
and mow the grass, and they're talking about they're sitting down in the shade watching the funeral, and they see this big limousine pull up, and they're talking about how cool that car is and how pretty the lady is. You know, said some girls really do look black, you look good in black, and talking about the widow or whatever. And they talked about his truck. They heard that his truck was already up for sale. And the key, the linchpin of the whole thing at the end of the song, he says, yeah, the bad thing is the guy owed me $40. And now he's dead.
Oh, he wrote that song, That's How I Got to Memphis.
Yep.
I like that song.
Oh, he wrote that too?
Oh, man, he wrote a bunch of them.
That's been covered a lot.
Yeah.
This is a great thing. Wow, shoot. See, man, I'm tempted here because I got to talk. There's a couple things I want to say about music, which is fitting for being on this bus, which is normally full of musicians. But there's a thing I want to say about getting buried. So I had a plan. Like, I had it all figured out what I wanted to do when I died with my body. And then now I've kind of been changing it around. When I was back home in Michigan, I went looking for a buddy of mine's. Man, there's a buddy of mine got killed in high school. A couple of guys got killed in high school. He got killed in high school, and I always remember when they lowered him down in the grave, his dad climbed down in there.
Oh,
whoa. Climbed down in the hole. It was horrible. And I went looking and didn't have a ton of time because I was on the way to the airport with my kids, and I had them kind of scrum. No, that's a lie. I was on the way to the airport with my wife, and went to right where I swear that was, but I couldn't find his deal.
The grave?
Yeah, and there's kind of two cemeteries by where I grew up. And that got me kind of wondering about getting buried where I grew up. And I was looking, where I grew up, you could go into the Twin Lakes Cemetery. It's only $650.
Really?
Yeah, I was looking the other day. The weird part that I noticed is if you want to get dug out of the Twin Lakes Cemetery, it's $1,300.
To move you?
To get disinterred.
Oh, wow.
Struck me as weird. You can get in there for cheaper than you can get out of there.
For real.
Secure me a lot.
We've got our own family cemetery.
You do?
Mm-hmm, where I grew up.
What do you guys charge?
Reeves Cemetery. It's like $300.
Maybe I'll get a spot there.
You can.
What the problem I have with the Twin Lakes Cemetery is it's $650 for a resident and $800 for a non-resident, but I'm going to apply for resident. You follow me?
Yeah.
Haven't been born there.
Right. You should. Yeah. You'll be grandfathered in.
Yeah.
How big is the Reeves Cemetery?
It's probably half an acre.
You guys ever disinter anybody out of there?
No. So far, everybody's been pretty well behaved.
What
no
year?
No, got 86.
No problems so far.
What year was the first Reeves buried there?
That first was probably, it had been before the war between the state, before the Civil War. They've been there.
The war against Northern aggression.
That one. That one. Same one. My grandmother would never call it the Civil War. She said there wasn't nothing civil about that.
So did you have any relatives, fight for the losing side there?
Yep, I did. One of them got killed in the first battle at Shallow.
Really? Mm-hmm. This bus, the minute I got on this bus, this tour bus, the first thing I said to that driver, and you can check with him, his name's John, I said, man, when we get to Pennsylvania, we need to make a little detour, and it won't even really add any time on between Pittsburgh and Philly. It won't add any time on. It'll add like 15 minutes to do a 60-mile little loop cutoff and go through Gettysburg.
Yeah.
And you go smack nuts through Gettysburg. But then it occurred to me, he only drives at night.
Oh, yeah. Y'all had to bring some spotlights. I know. You got your coon light? You
can just hang out the window. No, I didn't bring any gear like that. So I might now have to go up there and talk back to tell John again the plan's off. Speaking of music, we have been, much to the consternation of listeners, we have been running Ride On by Chris Denny as the outro music. It's a much hated, most people hate the outro song. I liked it, and the reason I used it is, one time we talked about something too long.
It's like a metaphor, right?
We talked about something too long, and someone said something like, you beat that horse to death. And so Chris Denny's Ride On is, you know, we done beat this damn horse to death. It's time to ride on.
Oh, there's another, the AC/DC Ride On. You ever heard of that one?
No, but I don't want to try to license from them.
Gotcha.
Because we licensed from Chris Denny. It wasn't a bad price.
I don't know if it's the same song. It's another lonely evening.
No.
In another lonely town.
No.
That one?
Okay. I don't think it's the same one.
Our license is, just so happens, we would be doing this anyways, but our license is expiring. We'd have to renew our license on Ride On, and so we're going to make a major transition. We're going to do away with current outro music and only use music composed and written by audience members.
Because
We've got a lot of great submissions. Great songs from people. You know, we sometimes use Doug Dern's song. We're going to use some of Chester's stuff. Kryn's going to call it Chet's Frats. You like that, Chester?
I like that.
So if you got music that you've written and composed and want us to use it for our outro music, all you got to do is send it in. Where does Kryn want this to go to? Oh, send it into the Meat Eater Podcast at themeateater.com, subject line, outro music. You can sing about hunting and fishing, the podcast, pole beans, subject we discussed in our episodes, whatever strikes your creative fancy. That's a message from Kryn. So go ahead and send in your music. And do us a favor, too, of if you send it in, do us a favor of, like, sort of, you know, giving us a written permission to use. We can start showcasing your music, which we do sometimes anyway.
You got one, Chet?
So I have a bunch of songs, but
he wrote one last night. The man with three lips.
Yeah. Yep. The man with three lips. It's a sad song.
Sounds like it.
It's not creepy.
Oh, dude, you want to hear a sad-ass story, man. This is what happened last night. You know the term green room where you hang out?
Right.
Did you ever raid one of those?
No.
You never raided a green room?
Greenhouse.
You'd find all kinds of shit in a green room, man. Yeah. You'd probably find other people's stuff, not even from the people who are currently in there.
Check the couch cushion.
So I don't know why did I want to tell you a real sad story?
We were
teasing Chester's shoes. I wasn't.
Yeah.
What Chester had on a pair of Reebok shoes, which is I don't even know that company was still around. When I was telling when I was a kid, I wanted, like, I said designer shoes like Reeboks or Nikes, and my wife said, I get what you're saying, but you wouldn't, like, Nikes and Reeboks aren't designer shoes. So then I told my world's saddest story about how I grew up thinking, this is not the world's saddest story, but sad to me. I grew up thinking we were poor rather than very well off relative to a lot of our neighbors. Because I couldn't have things like, I had to wear Keds, I had to wear Tough Skins, Rustlers. I couldn't get like a, you know, some kids that come to school with a single serving bag of Doritos.
Oh, yeah. Grapes. Green grapes was my dream.
You wanted to have those.
I wanted to have them.
Or kids that have that thing where there's cheese on the end and crackers and you peel it back. All this kind of stuff
Lunchables.
Meant to be. Yeah, or they'd have like name brand pop.
Yeah.
Like they'd have an actual Pepsi.
Dr. Thunder.
I thought kids were like, we always asked for kids. I thought those were fancy
kids, dude.
Shoes.
You wanted Nikes and Reeboks and shit.
Adidas.
Man. Yeah. All that. Yeah, anything like that. So it's just rather than being poor, my parents just weren't dumbasses. So we couldn't have that stuff. And it killed me because I'd have to go with like a sandwich that my mom made. And then she put chips in a little baggie. And rather than thinking that my mom loved me, I thought that my mom hated me because I couldn't line up with the other kids at lunch. And then one day we're at MC Sporting Goods and they have these two pairs of Nikes or a pair of Nikes, but it's not. They're not matched. One's got orange stripes and one's got red stripes. There's like subtle cosmetic differences, but they're the same size. And they're like next to nothing. So my mom buys me these Nikes.
What do you think they cost?
I don't know, man. It's too long ago. I was in fifth grade.
Yeah, just ballpark it. Like $9?
Yeah, like something like that.
Okay.
Like they would have had to have been competitive with no-name shoes. Hush Puppies and shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
Buster Brown.
I go down there, and I was like, no one's going to notice that. You know what I mean? And I was saying, man, I didn't even make it to the door of the school. Those shoes don't match.
That's kind of sad.
And now, but now that kind of stuff, I feel like is probably in style.
Oh, yeah. Like if you gave those shoes to my daughter, she'd wear them. She'd be proud as hell of that, you know? But that prompted Chester to be like, that's not a sad story. And he told me a sad story about being teased over a minor birth defect. Bad. And then that night started writing a story, The Man with Three Lips.
I got to tell the story now.
Oh, yeah. I think you should, Chester, because it's going to makes my story seem like a spoiled brat complaining, man.
I want to know what Brent wanted instead of green grapes. You like you
he
got
wanted
purple
green
grapes.
I wanted them.
Right, but you had purple grapes instead.
Didn't have any grapes.
No grapes. Okay. What have you settled for purple grapes?
No.
Okay.
I'd never seen a purple grape. Green. This kid was a doctor's son. And he had a Ziploc bag full of green grapes. And I'd ask him, I said, man, let me have one of them grapes. And he'd give me one. But I would have given him, if I'd have had any kind of money, I would have bought them. And but I swore if I ever have money and my kids want to have green grapes to go to school with, and they don't even eat grapes, but there's some in my icebox.
Really?
Do you like them?
Oh, see, I
would.
Love anything that I wanted to have when I was a kid, if my kids act like they wanted, I'd be like, no. I mean, they have a lot of stuff. Yeah. But if it was up to me, I'd torture them a lot more than their mom tortures them, man.
Yeah, them green grapes, man, that was good. It reminded my dad, he said that he remembered being in school and sitting there, and he said that he brought his lunch in a sack. The kids in town had brought, you know, a lunchbox. They'd open that lunchbox up, and they'd have sliced bread in there, like Wonder Bread and bologna and cheese in there. He said, I'd open my sack up, and I'd have homemade sourdough bread and cured ham. He said, I was sitting there by that kid that was eating that Wonder Bread and bologna thinking, man, that guy's got it made. When he actually, you know, he was winning that war.
Should I tell the sad story?
Oh, yeah, the man with, just sing it, Chester.
Oh.
Once was
sorry,
a man.
My feet stink, too.
That's fine, Chester.
Well, I didn't notice.
Okay, good. Yeah, you're fine.
I got
Spencer's got some soap you can borrow.
Spencer's throwing me a Wayne over there with his arm around you. Go ahead.
You got your arm around me.
Oh, that's what I do,
We're just getting nice and close.
And Yanni's got his arm around Chester.
Tell us your story, Chester. We don't want you to feel too sad.
When I was a kid, I went to a private Catholic school right down the road. Tiny little thing, called Our Lady of Angels.
Well, that sounds Catholic.
Yeah.
Something about it.
But it just goes to show you that all this story, after I get done with it, they're not all angels there at the school. Mm,
really?
Yeah. No.
Well, this is a story about having three lips.
Yeah. Right? So when I was a kid, all the way up until like fifth grade, when I'd smile real big, my lip would kind of curl over and it looked like I had three lips. So I ended up
I'm going to do a visual for the camera. This is Chester's mouth.
Upper lip.
Here's his mouth. And this is what he looked like.
How's that look, Phil?
Fantastic. great
tell the difference.
I mean, I had some buck.
I'm
Chester. kind of had some buck teeth too, you know, like three lips and some buck teeth.
Yeah, a real display.
Yeah.
Said hello before you did.
Yeah. So I eventually, like, once I knew, I stopped smiling.
Because
I had kids picking on me and calling me three lips. And I didn't really let things bother me too much. But eventually that one kind of, I started to realize that, yeah, this isn't quite normal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
God, so
that's terrible.
Eventually, we went to the doctor, and this guy was confident that he could make it better. And we went there, and he cut. I kind of had, I don't know what they call that, but the skin
that
on your
bridge,
lip, bridge goes down farther, and it was down further than normal. He cut that off, and it made it worse. So you could like,
you had four
now
lips.
Now I no, it just, now I had it all the time.
Oh God.
You know.
Yeah.
So you know, and I got super self-conscious about it, and to the point where I actually had plastic surgery on my upper lip to get that excess skin removed. Yeah.
You got some old pictures of that lip?
Old three lips. I'm sure I do. I got to ask my folks. And
I thought not having green grapes was bad. Yeah.
It's called a frenum or a frenulum.
Oh,
there you go. A little flap of skin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Three lips.
Huh. But the thing about all this, like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and she's talking about going in and taking, like, you know, like putting a mask on and earphones on and taking like hallucinogenics and stuff to try to like tap into your inner problems and stuff, man. I think if I did all that, I'd just be thinking about them Doritos and shit. Sneakers and stuff, you know? It's like, it's not a big deal, but some stuff sticks with you.
That $1,300 disinternment fee.
You think that's what it would
fee?
Go back to, huh?
I don't know. I don't know why. I always think about that. Yeah. It was a weird
not
deal.
Not the two dudes that died in high school?
No. Or the time I told you about the time we went to that airplane wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Watched them pull them bodies out of that. No, it'd be either way. Yeah, I've said it before and I'll say it 1,000 times more. If you got a family, you got people that rely on you, you need to take life insurance seriously. And Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. So with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million in coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Your life insurance policy, you know, that you get at work may not offer enough protection for your family's needs. Policy Genius gives you unbiased advice from a licensed expert support team. Now, this is super convenient, right? Because a lot of times, you know, something like life insurance, you're just going to put it off because you're like, when will I ever have time to do that? I don't even know who to talk to about it. Well, this helps you do it online. Okay, again, you're comparing options from top companies, all right? Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Hey, everybody, I'm talking here about Montana Knife Company from our very own state of Montana. This company was founded by one of the most experienced master bladesmiths in the world, Josh Smith, who over recent months I've become friends with. And my God, have I learned a lot about knives from this guy. Just a phenomenal hometown company that makes world-renowned knives. Josh has been making knives for 30 years. You get one of these knives up and open it, it is sharp like something that came from outer space. And here's the deal. They make knives that can be sharpened. You can work on these knives. If you don't want to work on them, you send it to them and they'll work on it. They'll get it sharp. Phenomenal hunting knives. If you want to see them in action, we just did, me and John Hayes, the taxidermist, just did a video about how to properly skin a black bear. Watch that video, and in that video, you'll see Montana Knife Company knives in action. MKC products usually sell out in minutes of being released, which is true. But now, for the first time, They're dabbling with having knives in stock on their site. So right now you can grab yourself a Blackfoot 2.0 or the ultralight Speed Goat. Use code MEATEATER and you get 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company. Working knives for working people. 10% off with the code MEATEATER. That's a good deal. The single most valuable tool I have for chasing turkeys next to my scatter gun is the Onyx Hunt app. If I'm hunting turkeys, I'm using Onyx. If I'm not hunting turkeys, I'm using Onyx. I'm always using Onyx. I live by that stuff. I can't tell you the number of birds this app has put me on by allowing me to easily find new areas to hunt. It's invaluable. I use it all the time. Even properties I know super well. And I'm at my buddy Bubbly Doug's house. I'm using Onyx, and I've hunted this place a million times. With their compass mode, I can pinpoint exactly on the map where a gobble rang out from, and then figure out the perfect spot to set up. Meaning, if I'm sitting there, let's say I'm at Bubbly Doug's, and I'm in the navel, and I hear, pow, I'll like instinctively pull up Bubbly Doug's place on Onyx, and I'll look at the topography, and I'll be like, oh, that sucker must be over in that little opening over there. Waypoints also, and the ability to share them, okay, comes in handy every spring. Whether that's revisiting old waypoints where I've been on birds before or sharing them to buddies to help put them on birds, this app will help you find more turkeys. Onyx Hunt has a special offer for you too. Use code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this turkey season. So here's the deal. This, we're getting to the meat of the show here now. We, a long time ago.
Is that right?
That was all just crazy. No, I'm serious.
Okay.
This is the meat of the show. Long time ago, we had asked for your crazy trail cam picks because we want to start doing a crazy trail cam pick segment, which I'm committed to because I'm a big fan of trail cameras. I like looking at trail camera pictures.
Have we thrown around the idea of doing a crazy trail cam pick calendar?
We did. Or I thought of it, but we haven't done it because we're doing old shitters right now.
Yeah.
But that'd be a good idea.
Something to keep in mind.
It would. So we had asked for, and I just said, like, send us your crazy trail cam pictures. We're going to get into our first crazy trail cam picture segment right now. And it's going to be about cats.
It's going to be about cats, but the first picture's a pig.
Well, this is a prelude because we didn't do a good job of clarifying what we meant by crazy trail cam pictures. There was an overwhelming response. Corinne can't even get through all the trail cam pictures. But this is a note from Corinne. I do want to clarify the specificity of our trail cam pick submission parameters and ask you to check yourself and be thoughtful about what's warranted. This isn't an excuse to send Corinne, I don't want to use the word she used, to send Corinne pictures of fetishes out in the woods. Or full frontals of some guy taking a whiz onto a bush.
Whoa.
I think she's mostly joking. But this is an important thing because, well, we pulled up one example. A guy sent in a picture of a wild pig, and it seems like the only thing that he's interested in is that it has its lipstick out.
Five-legged hog.
So, yeah, so it's like, he's like, hey, here's a trail cam picture of a wild pig with an erection. So, that's great, but that's
for the whole.
There's just a limited. There's limited. Now, if you send in a picture of a deer with a greatly enlarged scrotum, that would warrant discussion because it could be all sorts of problems, and we would send that to a deer specialist. We'd send it to a wildlife, a veterinarian who specializes in wildlife. And they might come back with, oh, that's a very common thing. Could be an engorged tick bite, all manner of reproductive ailments. So that would be interesting. But just the fact that this hog has his lipstick out is...
But if you look closely, the hog also looks like it has a unicorn horn or something.
That's his ear.
That's his ear?
Yeah, that's his other ear. Oh, that's his ear. That hog looks like he's been marked. See that notch out of it right there?
Oh, yeah. He's got a cut
ear.
Oh,
I see. So his ear is just split.
Well, that's the thing guys will do, too, because they'll, guys will castrate them, catch them, castrate them, turn them back out, and notch their ear. with a certain way that they like to notch them so they know that they're the ones that did it. As the guy put to me and Yanni, it takes their mind off ass and puts it on grass.
Mm-hmm. They called it a bar hog.
Barred hog.
Barred hog, yeah. Yep.
And we went out with him and barred a hog. And
sketchy.
Yeah, but he ran right off.
Yep.
That really, you done that to me, I'd have laid there.
We're trying to fight you.
My brother's in-laws, you know, where I grew up, that was having hogs in the woods. Having a hog claim was like a deer lease. I mean, you claimed from this creek to some other place, another natural barrier or something, or somebody's property. And all the hogs that ran on that property there, was they were ours.
Even though it was public land.
It wasn't public land.
Oh, it wasn't? Okay.
No, huh? This was down in the Potlatch Timber Company owned all the, it was all owned by a timber company. But we would have a claim in there from one piece of property to another, and another family would have that as well.
But it would be like documented somewhere.
In a courthouse.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Cleveland County Courthouse.
I thought you meant claimed like you told your friends.
Well, that's where it started, but it would be documented there. And then, but each family had their own mark, had their, which is like a brand. You know, like ours was an underbit on the left and then a crop on the left and then a split on the right. So the underbit was the bottom side of that ear, the hog's ear on the left side was lopped off, and then the end was cropped off. So it was blunt and then flat on the bottom. And the other side, you just take a pocket knife and split it. So that,
and this
that,
is when you barred a hog.
Yeah, and that's when you castrated the hog. Well, my brother's in-laws, they were catching hogs like folks did back in the day and cutting hogs, and they caught down there, they were squirrel hunting, and the dogs made this big old hog that had been trying to catch forever, and nobody, they're digging around in their pockets and nobody can find a pocket knife. But my brother's father-in-law, his brother, I believe it was his brother or his uncle, had a Prince Albert can in his pocket. Mm. It had Prince Albert tobacco in a tin can. So he took that Prince Albert can and broke it in half to have a sharp edge, and that's what they cut that hog with.
Hmm.
And said when they turned him loose, he didn't hang around either. But he said it was pretty wild,
messy.
So yeah. What is the significance? Unless you're dating it, who cares what mark it's got? If you catch a hog and it's barred,
well,
unless you know the date, what do you care?
That's what folks were feeding their families with. That was property.
No, I understand. I understand that. But you're claiming the area.
Yeah. Well, it was
so
just,
why do you need to have the area?
Because there's no fences.
Okay. Let's say I'm claiming the area of this computer.
Right.
Okay. And this area of the computer is mine. And you catch a pig on my thing. I catch a pig on my area.
Okay.
Now, if it's got some other dude's mark, I don't care. It's in my area.
Oh, no, that's not the way it works.
Oh, it does not work that way.
No, that's his hog.
Oh.
And people respect that.
Yeah. Hatfields and
McCoys,
so you
have to catch,
that's what that
you have to
doing.
Catch your hog in your area.
If somebody, if you catch a hog there and it's mine, you send me word, hey, we got this hog.
Come get it.
You want to turn him loose or you want him? That's how it works. It's all on the honor system.
Gotcha.
And that's what the Hatfields and McCoys was. That all started.
So where's the real value of having the claim for the hogs on the chunk of land?
Well, the hog claim was just for, you know, this is where we operate. This is where our hogs are going to be.
Mm.
Your hogs can come through, but this is our headquarters. This is the place where we're going to catch them here. We're going to skin them. We're going to render them here. Whatever we're going to do with them, and then but this is our spot. And we're going to turn them loose, whatever. That was just an area, more or less, that you did your operation on. But there were no fences.
Yep.
So it was just free range.
Were there, like, not enough freezers then to just kill the hogs on the spot and deal with them that way?
There wasn't any freezers.
No freezers.
Mm-hmm. No, you know when...
Now, this is not in my lifetime now. This is when my grandparents. And,
sure.
You know, if you've ever heard when Dr. Randall did his dissertation... when he's doing his like special PhD, he got into the way that American hunting just really changed with the freezer.
Oh,
just really changed how everything went down.
Oh, I'm
once
sure.
You had a freezer, changed the way people talked about it. The idea of a full freezer, you know what I mean? It was just not like that, man. You got a deer, you'd get a deer and you consumed it, dried it, gave it away. But like the whole thing of like filling the freezer, obviously without a freezer, wasn't an issue.
Yeah, that's, you know, not everybody had a freezer. Very few people did, but everybody had a smokehouse and, you know, smoked their own meat. That's what they
country
kept
ham.
Yeah. There's they would last for years. You could keep them for years.
Yeah, you go down in Virginia, man, and they sell those hams. They're on the shelf.
Yeah.
Next to, like, the canned beans.
Yeah.
So damn salty.
Yeah, they'd be there forever.
So just
in a sack of salt.
So what does that look like? I mean, it's literally a ham, super salted, smoked so there's a good crust on the – protective crust on the outside.
You got to purge it of all that salt, man. You couldn't eat it.
No, you couldn't eat it. It would be – it'd be bad. And it's not salt like – it's curing salt. It's a little different salt than what –
and
what
you
shaking
purge
on
it by
eggs.
Just putting it in water.
Yeah.
I want to get back to our special camera thing because we're going to talk about cats. First, I want to talk about a couple things with trail cams, and you guys can throw in. Far and away, the number one submission we got is cat questions. Far and away.
Cat. Oh.
Cat. Is this a mountain lion?
Oh, yeah.
Got it.
Is this a mountain lion? Is this a mountain lion? My buddy says it's a mountain lion. Is this a mountain lion? This is a mountain lion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, unless you're in Tennessee.
You need to, just as a trail cam setup deal, when you get a really good picture and you and your buddies all swear you got a mountain lion in Illinois, maybe you do. As far as that. So mountain lions have shown an incredible ability. Mountain lions, panthers, catamounts, whatever you want to call them, have shown an incredible ability to show up in weird places. They'll go on big mega jaunts. You know, a mountain lion will come out of the Black Hills, get hit by a car in Connecticut. So at this point, now 20 years ago, if you said it, you were crazy, but at this point, it's accepted these things show up in weird spots. A couple have showed up in Wisconsin. Like, they show up in weird spots. But the first thing you need to do when you gotta, when you get a picture and your buddies and you are all arguing about what you have on the camera, take a tape measure and go over to wherever you think the thing was standing and figure out some dimensions. Try to put your camera, if you got to put a thing in there, stick a thing in there. Stick a branch. Make something, something somewhere to use for scale. So if it's just looking out over a field, bury some sticks. So you can start getting a sense of how big was it. We get a lot of mountain lion pictures, and I look at them like, it's just a ditch cougar. That's a house cat. You got a house cat. If you go down and look at this one image. So this is a very, very typical note. Guy writes in, debate on whether this is the return of the infamous mountain lion that came to Connecticut. Now there was one mountain lion that got killed in Connecticut. So he's like, is this another mountain lion in Connecticut? Could be, because we know that it's happened before. He says, I think it's just a house cat. But he's alone in that camp. Tell me I'm not crazy. Yep, Greenwich, Connecticut. His cousin used to have hunting access. Makes you think he did something bad and lost his hunting access. It was a property once owned by the Rockefeller estate. Oh, it got sold. He didn't do nothing bad. Not too far from Milford, where the one from South Dakota was hit by a car. That same mountain lion was also spotted in Greenwich just days before it was hit by the car. So it's possible, but I believe it's just a house cat. That's a house cat.
I concur.
That is a house cat, but here's the thing. Why are you and your friends not out with a tape measure between that log and those trees?
Well, just taping the diameter of that log, just measuring the height of that log from the ground to the top of it would tell you that it's not
a
mountain lion.
That's an 8-inch log.
Yeah.
And that's an 8-inch tall house cat.
Yeah, exactly.
A yellow one.
And listen, people shouldn't be ashamed.
I'm not dogging on the guy.
But I think people are when they're like, you know, and that's why they're so adamant, you know, once they say it once and they believe it. But like when I went and interviewed all those biologists in Washington that are dealing with all the mountain lions and then talking to them about the calls that they get, I mean, they talk about just how and that they've seen it in like the right scenario where just visual perception and just tricks of the landscape that, like, it's a house cat, but in that scene, whatever makes it is, whatever illusion is there, it looks 10 times bigger than it is. And you're like, oh yeah, it's a lion. And then it's not, you know? And I think it especially happens in these trail cams that just, like, you lose depth perception.
It's glowing white because it's at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even, like, the facial profile. Now, we got a lot of submissions where there's just nothing to really talk about because there is no thing for scale. It was too blurry. You're like, I have no idea what that is, and I wouldn't trust anyone. There's not even enough there that I would trust anyone to even have an opinion. It's sort of like a photograph that just doesn't warrant any kind of respectable opinion because the amount of detail is so absent. You say, you might look at a picture and be like, I can tell that there's something that seems, you know, alive-ish off in the distance. So for a lot of those, we couldn't really take it on. But this one, and you have this up, Phil?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you go and look, we'll post some of these. You can go on YouTube and look, and you'll see the cat we're talking about. That's a ditch cougar. That's a house cat. Now, here's one that's super interesting. Super interesting. And I gotta predicate this one by saying, you could always be getting duped, and someone could be sending you a not legitimate photo. They could be sending you something they found on the internet, whatever. We saw some of those and threw them out, but some of them you just kind of got to take someone at their word. We might be write them back and have a little bit of a dialogue with them. This one's interesting.
Hey, everyone. Phil the engineer here. Steve and the crew are still on tour, so the responsibility falls on my shoulders to butt in here like Ron Howard and Arrested Development to let you guys know that we got duped. That's right. This picture that we're about to look at and discuss is not from Baker County, Florida, but it's a melanistic black leopard from South Africa that's been raised in captivity. This picture's been floating around the internet for years. The leopard's name is Cole, which is very fitting because that's exactly what the person who sent this picture in will be receiving in their stocking this year from Santa Claus. But in all seriousness, we could have cut this out, but we thought, hey, let's let it in. The discussion was fun. Let it be a cautionary tale for those looking at trail cam pictures on the internet. And that's us included. So just keep in mind, this is not from Florida. It's a leopard from South Africa. But with that in mind, back to the show.
If legit, this one is interesting because here he goes. Real Black Panthers. This photo was taken at my hunting club in Baker County, Florida. My dad also had a video of a mama panther and two cubs a couple years ago, but he deleted it before I could get a video. Then he says, this is from my friend's hunting club in Ludowice, I don't know what the hell that is, Ludowice, Georgia. It's in the southeast part of the state. So there's two of them. Now, the Florida one, man, everyone knows there's no such thing as a black panther. Or do they?
Do a little key.
What in the world is this?
Are you talking about the one that's the full frontal or the one that's in the shade?
That full frontal cat is not a house cat. That is not a ditch cougar, barn cat. That is a crazy picture.
But aren't there like
it's a black phased
jaguar.
That's not a thing.
Not a thing.
No, there aren't any melanistic ones. That's my understanding. Now, I've also heard that a black panther is a wet mountain lion. A black panther is a wet panther. A black panther is a muddy panther. I'd like to see more of this guy right here.
Tell you what catches my eye is that rear paw, foot.
It's held kitty cat like.
Well, and it looks small. Now, they are smaller on a cat on the back feet than the front feet. But, yeah, I don't know.
It's
something
no,
just looks a little odd.
But yeah, the fact that it's a black panther looks odd.
Well, yeah, but it's like a little, it's a little shiny.
Real shiny.
It's a little famished, scrawny looking. That back foot just doesn't seem quite right.
He holds out that it's an escaped zoo animal, but I don't know what the hell zoo animal it would be. And he said he checked around and he hasn't heard of any escape black leopards. Because there are Leopards.
Yeah, leopards.
There's a melanistic leopard. Okay. Is there a melanistic jaguar?
I don't know. That's what I was asking.
There's a melanistic leopard. So if someone brought a melanistic leopard over from Africa and cut it loose in Florida, that would explain everything, but he hasn't caught wind of that.
Well, what about the grass, the natural grasses up there? Are those native grasses?
Man, that's something we hadn't thought to show. We should show that to Yanni's wife.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. She's going to say, can you get me a closer picture of the seed pod?
Yeah, what I can't get over is all, like, 70% of these pictures sent in are a picture of a picture. Like, they took their phone and they took a picture of their computer screen. And so we've now lost, like, 40% of the quality through that process.
That's real common. Just sometimes you can see the reflection of their house from when they took the picture of the picture.
Right-click the photo, save it, and email that to Corinne. Don't take the photo of the photo. You've, like, ruined what could be an amazing photo by doing that.
My brother sends me trail cam pics all the time like that. It's like, man, did you draw this? He's like, no, I took a picture of it with my phone. Gosh. It's like one of them Flintstone cameras. You got a bird in there picking it up.
This is a very compelling photograph. We should at least send this guy a Believer hat.
For real.
A Black Panther Believer hat. And
I feel like, again, we don't know what that grass is, but it's extremely tall compared to that animal. I know there's tall grasses in that part of the country, but...
Well, it looks like goat weed. That right there looks like goat weed. I mean, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying it
would not surprise me whatsoever if it was another ditch cougar.
Dude, listen, there's a lot of things that could be. That's not one of them. That head is not a barn cat's head.
Look how long its
snout
is.
Angle, light, man, there's just so many things at play.
I'm with Steve. Whiskers are long. That does not look like a house cat. Well,
what this guy would have been really helpful if this guy would have done is taken his tape measure. Is this thing 5 feet long? Or is it 8? Or is it 28 inches long?
Yes,
the snout just is way longer than your typical.
Phil's weighing in over here.
House cat.
I understand, but
at the same time, my wife and I lived at a house north of campus in Bozeman, and there was like a stray black cat who we called him Jafar because he sort of reminded us of just kind of like a sinister. Like he looks close to this. He had a longer snout. If you saw him from a distance, you'd be like, "Is that a cat or is that something else?"
Really?
Like they do exist.
Did you send this picture in, Phil? That's a compelling photo. Now the one down is another interesting thing about trail cam problems. When you have an animal cast in shadow, it's hard. And again, where is the tape measure? Because that tuft of grass would be a great place to start laying out your tape measure. Because if that tuft of grass is 10 inches wide, that makes this a really interesting picture. If that tuft of grass is 2 inches wide, it makes it not a very interesting picture.
Is that a gravel road?
Yeah.
We don't know. It's another photo of a computer screen. And like, if this person's computer screen was facing south, it looks like they were standing on the southwest side of the computer when they took the photo. There's just like no level of detail in it.
It's best going to kind of hurt everybody's feelings.
I mean, it could be an incredible photo.
It's
going to
hurt everybody's feelings, and they're not going to send anything
in. No, but Spencer's 100% right. It's like, why wouldn't have you just sent the original?
I think that maybe we should have in our...
only send what originals.
What kind of cameras he run? He's running a Moultrie camera. Yeah, he should. Yeah, send originals. But this is a learn because this is the first segment.
Yeah.
So I'm using cats because they come up. I selected cats. We'll get into the next segment. Maybe it's diseased animals. I don't know. It's animals with wounds. It's animals carrying arrows sticking out of them. Whatever. Today is cats, but it's meant to be a little bit of a primer, a helper on how to help yourself.
Yeah.
Don't send pictures
of pictures.
Of pictures. Try to get us the actual picture and try to do a little bit of take a thing of known scale. Take an item of known scale. Take a 5 gallon bucket and go out if you know, at a minimum, take a 5 gallon bucket, go out, set it where you suspect that animal is standing, and take a test photo and capture that and put together a little dossier of information that we can then share with experts to help us out.
A fact sheet.
Yep.
Yanni, what's your craziest trail cam photo? Anything exciting?
I get a lot, which I find exciting and interesting, is I'll get bobcats with fresh prey in their mouth. You know, they're cruising around with like a squirrel or, you know, a grouse. That's always interesting. I've gotten a couple collared wolves.
Really?
You know, in Wisconsin. Yeah. And our neighbor to the south, I mean, literally bordering us, got a mountain lion picture this year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
One just got hit. No, I think it got hit in Minnesota.
Well, the guy that in self-defense shot the one with the bow in Wisconsin, and that wasn't too far from us.
Oh, I heard about that. Was that legit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Self-defense. Like, what do you mean? What does he mean?
Like, the guy just said that he felt like that cat was getting ready to come into his tree and tussle with him. And he felt, you know, fear for his life.
Pat wrote a good article on it.
Yeah. On themeateater.com, I think.
Yep. Yeah, I saw. I got to get more educated on that. Keep scrolling down because this gets great in terms of cats. I've held on to this photo for a few years now. This is in reference to one from another Connecticut one. Wow, geez. And very seldom do I break it out to show someone. Allow me to elaborate. You see, my home state is in Connecticut. No, his home state is Connecticut. His home state is not in Connecticut. And people lose their minds if you say mountain lion. If a questionable photo pops up, it's immediately discredited as a lion.
Yeah.
Oh, it's immediately discredited. If a photo pops up and you say it's a lion, it gets immediately discredited. People refuse to believe there could ever be one in the state, even when, and I believe it's been mentioned on the previous podcast, one was hit by a car in 2011. I've seen many bobcats while sitting in the trees in the fall. I'm not 100%, but my gut leans toward a mountain lion. He apologizes to Clay that it is not a black panther. North Stonington, Connecticut. Right on the border with Rhode Island. Bobcat. I'm going 100% bobcat, but that leads me to my point. The bummer is the tail's absent. Which also leads me to think, how many photos do you have set? And do you have video? I'm asking this feller, because if he had a three photo spurt separated by a couple seconds, he'd probably have a doozy. But if he's got a single photo, he's going to wind up always being disappointed.
Yeah.
And if you have, there's another thing to keep in mind, because some people don't realize this. If you have a cellular camera and you're allowed to use cellular cameras in the area, generally, you'll get texted or emailed, whatever, one. But the card holds the video. You follow me? Mm-hmm. So if you had this thing on a burst of photos, you might have caught him when you could see his butt and see what he had for a tail. But I think you're looking at a bobcat, especially because the dude says he sees bobcats all the time. I think it's a skinny summer pelt bobcat. Any dissenters?
I don't see enough fluff to his head to make me think bobcat.
You see them all the time.
Summer bobcat.
Yeah, if that picture was in Montana, I'd be like, yeah, it's like 80% chance that's a bobcat. But Connecticut, because it looks like a bobcat, I'd say bobcat.
Now, the next photo is a really good one. Yeah, because it's one that you can absolutely solve.
Okay.
It's the only one that can be categorically solved.
This one looks like photo inception.
You've got
like someone took a picture of a computer screen.
I like your high standards for this.
And then someone took a photo of that screenshot.
Yeah.
And now we're like four layers removed from
the
original.
And then his mom took a picture and sent it to us.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this one because it's solvable. It's a cat squatting in tall grass. Very poor quality. If you were walking through, you remember in the old days when you used to be able to have your TV set on static? Like, because you had like three channels. And if it was on any other channel, it was just like static. We'd call it the bug show when we were kids. You'd think that this was just a set on static.
Yeah.
But if you look carefully, you start to make out that it's a cat.
Is that his tail?
But yes, you, okay. Where does he say what's going on? Southeastern Minnesota on a watering hole. We have not been able to figure out what this is, and it's been a topic of discussion. Is it a deer? No. Bobcat? We'll talk about it. Or mountain lion? We will talk about it. Aaron. Aaron, go to the right end of that cat. First off, where's your tape measure? Second, go to the right, because you'd be able to go to that spot. The clumps in the grass would guide you right to that spot. Go to the right side of that picture. That cat is squatting and taking a piss. And its tail, to not get soiled, his little bobcat tail is curled up and black-tipped. Its tail is bobbed. It's a bobcat. 100%.
That's what it looks like.
Bobcat.
And you, if you look, I was looking. I was trying to find the spots. But if you look right there, Yanni, look at that.
But they have poor spots out there.
Ain't that spots?
Really?
You think?
I mean, that's why they don't. That's why they're not valuable. That's why a bobcat can be. That's why a bobcat from the high desert. You know, like a bobcat from the high desert, like the Mojave or something, or all manner of areas in Idaho, places in Utah, whatever, can be worth $1,000, and then a bobcat from Michigan can be worth $15.
They just don't have the spot quality.
They don't have good spots. They don't have a white belly and black spots on it. They're dirty colors. That's they don't have clean spots. Like when I was a kid, I wasn't even trying to catch bobcats because they were worth nothing. And meanwhile, guys are selling them for $800, $1,000, $1,200.
Montana cats are
can
good
be valuable.
Cats, right?
Yeah, can be valuable.
What about a southern bobcat?
No.
Nope.
Like the spot-wise?
No, it's not good.
No spots.
You want...
High country, usually.
Yep. You want... They get valuable when you got, like, if it's four fingers wide on the belly and pure white with very cleanly defined black spots, that's a value. That's going to wind up on an oligarch's wife.
You know,
it's going to wind up lining the coat of an oligarch's wife.
You know, I learned recently, speaking of furs, I was thinking about getting one of my first light, big puffy down jackets lined with a coyote, you know, that I had.
Oh, the trim?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fixing to do that.
And I didn't know this, but like you also rate the coyotes by how many of those rounds that you get. And I didn't know that it's cut like this. It's a circumference piece, not a length piece.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that until recently. Yeah. Oh, it makes really total sense.
Yeah.
You take the hide, cut it like you're cutting firewood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And make, yeah. Once someone said that to me, I was like, man, that makes a hell of a lot of sense.
There's an old guy that lived in our neighborhood. And or I say a neighborhood, he lived in the country where we lived, and he talked about making shoelaces, boot laces out of squirrels, squirrel hides. I think, how in the world could you make a pair of boot laces, leather boot laces out of a squirrel? And he said, well, it's easy. And they tan it and tack it up on the barn, on the side of the barn, and they'd take a knife and they'd cut it in swirls like that.
Concentric circles.
Yeah. And then... He said that you would wear out a pair of Brogan shoes before you broke a pair of squirrel laces.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's what he said. So they was absolutely tough.
I'm doing that, man.
For real.
That's interesting.
I've never done it.
One time I took a buffalo hide and took a knife and started doing that, cutting a half-inch wide strip of leather around the edge. You realize you could make something. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You get 100-yard
lariat rope.
100-yard rope. Yeah. Just by doing that. Round and round and round. That's what people do to make those big long leather ropes.
How many squirrels have you tanned, Steve?
Man, we used to try to tan them when we were kids. We never got one to successfully work out. Mm. We would take saddle soap and stuff and try to rub it in there, and it never worked out.
What do you think the shortcoming was?
Pre-internet.
Okay.
You got it. People don't remember. Like, people like you don't know this. You used to not be able to find things out.
Right.
In the encyclopedia, if you looked it up, it was only current to the date that book was printed.
Yeah. The ones
we had in our house was one they got my brother when he was, they were 10 years old. There were countries in there that wasn't even the same name anymore.
You're right, man. You'd look and be like, the Ottoman Empire.
What?
Where's that?
Exactly.
We used to try and tan like rabbits and squirrels with, remember that orange bottle, like tanning kits that you'd order.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
and we'd always
get them on Cabela's.
Yeah,
and
we'd,
stuff.
We'd salt them. We'd salt them, and cure them and that stuff. But they always just, which hides do, turn rock solid, and we just never had the patience to break them and soften them.
Put them on a staking board and do that.
Yeah,
I was living for a while in Missoula, and there was this kind of old hippie couple next to me, in the house next to me. Oh, you want to hear a story? Not about them, but about that house, dude. Why? I never really told a story. That time I took someone to small claims court.
Was that the only time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the judge was so mad at him, they yelled at him.
Really?
And I got my money. I walked out of there, proud to be an
American. Oh, the judge was mad at him.
When I got that person, finally got that sumbitch into the small claims court, the judge, I laid out my whole deal. And the judge never even wanted to hear the, whatever they call them, mitigator or whatever. Didn't even want to hear what they had to say.
Are you going
to
tell us?
Just laid into them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you real quick. I'll try to tell us quick. Okay. Anyways, next door is this old hippie couple, and they would brain tan deer hides. But I was always surprised how much they shrank, whatever process they were using. Real, like, they'd want, the good-sized deer, and you'd wind up something's like,
Really?
I mean, small. Yeah, I was always, I could never figure out why their stuff was shrinking so bad.
I wonder if that's typical for brain tans.
I don't know. I'd like to get into it. It's just one of those things like chest, brain tanning. There's just certain things I'm not going to go down that path. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Chess? Is that what you said?
Just certain things that just seem like a deep hole.
Chess.
Do you know? And once you go into it, it just, you're never going to get to the bottom of the hole.
Uh-huh.
You know, you follow me?
Sure.
And so I don't go near stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'll check this out. I'll try to explain it real quick. We're living in this house, and you know sometimes when you're in a lease and you get a new, like, you're always trying to time your moves so that you don't pay rent in two places at once. But me and my buddy were in this one house, and this other house we really wanted came up. And we just had to do one of those deals where it sucked, but we had to pay the two rents. But in the long time, it was advantageous. Like, we'd recover our money because our new place was cheaper. So we had to pay two rents. So we're paying simultaneous rents. We moved most of our stuff out of the house. And we're in our new house. But then our other house that we're paying rent on, it's like the seventh of the month, that house burns down to the ground. Not our fault. It started in the wiring in the, somewhere in the house. The fire department did an investigation. They're like, it was a wiring issue, nothing to do with the tenants. We weren't even there anyway.
So, was there a moment where you thought it could have been your fault?
I didn't know, but no, I mean, they like very quickly, no, because we weren't in there. So, I mean, we didn't do it. It wasn't like we were partying or something. Someone caught something on fire. I wait a respectable amount of time, and I go to the landlord, and I say, I need my rent back from the 7th to the end of the month because the house doesn't exist anymore, and I'm renting it. Right? And they're like, well, you're not living there anyway. To which I said, well, we had a bunch of stuff in there, and it's now gone, and it's none of your business, and I could be renting it. It's like, I could have never stepped foot in there ever. What's it to do with you? If I wanted to go there, it was mine to go to. I'm renting it. How do you know where I'm going? The only reason you know I'm not there is because I told you I'm not there. It has nothing to do with the issue, whether I'm sleeping there or not. It's like, it's gone. It's not my fault. And you can't rent me a thing that is burned down because you have faulty wiring. They wouldn't give me the damn money. So eventually I would get down to the small claims court, and I come in and I got the fire department report and all these pictures and paperwork, and I get to go first, and I lay my thing out, and that judge turns to that landlord, and they're like, she's like, oh, you just cash them checks when they come in month after month after month. And the minute there's a problem, you can't be found. Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Not happy. Not happy with that landlord, man.
And you gained some faith in the American court system.
Oh, yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was like Lee Greenwood walking out of that place, man.
Hey, everybody. I'm talking here about Montana Knife Company from our very own state.
of Montana. This company was founded by one of the most experienced master bladesmiths in the world, Josh Smith, who over recent months I've become friends with. And my God, have I learned a lot about knives from this guy. Just a phenomenal hometown company that makes world-renowned knives. Josh has been making knives for 30 years. You get one of these knives up and open it, it is sharp like something that came from outer space. And here's the deal. They make knives that can be sharpened. You can work on these knives. If you don't want to work on them, you send it to them and they'll work on it. They'll get it sharp. Phenomenal hunting knives. If you want to see them in action, we just did, me and John Hayes, the taxidermist, just did a video about how to properly skin a black bear. Watch that video, and in that video, you'll see Montana Knife Company knives in action. MKC products usually sell out in minutes of being released, which is true. But now, for the first time, they're dabbling with having knives in stock on their site. So right now, you can grab yourself a Blackfoot 2.0 or the Ultralight Speed Goat. Use code MEATEATER, and you get 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company. Working knives for working people. 10% off with the code MEATEATER. That's a good deal. The single most valuable tool I have for chasing turkeys next to my scatter gun is the Onyx Hunt app. If I'm hunting turkeys, I'm using Onyx. If I'm not hunting turkeys, I'm using Onyx. I'm always using Onyx. I live by that stuff. I can't tell you the number of birds this app has put me on by allowing me to easily find new areas to hunt. It's invaluable. I use it all the time. Even properties I know super well. And I'm at my buddy Bubbly Doug's house. I'm using Onyx, and I've hunted this place a million times. With their compass mode, I can pinpoint exactly on the map where a gobble rang out from and then figure out the perfect spot to set up. Meaning, if I'm sitting there, let's say I'm at Bubbly Doug's, I'm in the navel, and I hear, pow, I'll like instinctively pull up Bubbly Doug's place on Onyx, and I'll look at the topography, and I'll be like, oh, that sucker must be over in that little opening over there. Waypoints also, and the ability to share them, okay, comes in handy every spring. Whether that's revisiting old waypoints where I've been on birds before or sharing them to buddies to help put them on birds, this app will help you find more turkeys. Onyx Hunt has a special offer for you too. Use code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this turkey season. O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/MeatEater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/MeatEater. I don't know what's next on trail cams. A lot of disease stuff. Keep sending them in, but try to take some lessons from what we discussed today. Two primary lessons being, Spencer?
The original photo.
And the tape measure. And this segment will improve greatly when we have those things.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's not coincidence that a lot of these questionable animals come in the form of a questionable picture.
So we haven't got any pictures of wolverines, fake or real, yet. However, little interesting news bit is Colorado, after their very contentious ballot initiative to reintroduce wolves, which got a lot of people fired up, they're now shooting to reintroduce wolverines, which I'm predicting will encounter zero pushback. I say that's a great idea.
Yeah. They ain't gonna bother nobody.
Well, Brody says this. Brody feels that knowing Polis, knowing the governor in Colorado, and how antagonistic he is to hunters, that that this will quickly be used to put in further fur trapping restrictions.
Oh, like I could put riders on this bill.
It'll be the Wolverine. So like, oh, now we have Wolverines, and we don't want someone accidentally catching the Wolverine, therefore you can't do X, Y, and Z. But if you do the reintroduction, it'll go in as an experimental population, so it'll be a little bit different. Maybe Brody's being a little cynical, but Brody's watched Colorado change a lot, and the current administration, like I said, is so outwardly antagonistic to hunters. And the governor has also expressed support for ending fur trapping altogether.
Wow.
Expressed support for protecting black bears and mountain lions from any hunting, regardless of population levels. So Brody, our very own Brody Henderson, is supportive of wolverines being on the landscape, but not supportive of what the end goal might be. If this is just an honest deal to bring in wolverines, great. Wolverines are cool.
Yeah, they're traditionally there, aren't they, in that area?
In the high country, yeah. Yeah. Problem with wolverines, we've gotten into this a couple of times. It's just they're a hard animal to count.
How many have you seen in your life?
One.
That was in Alaska?
With Yanni.
I saw one on that. I saw one on the moose hunt that we were at with these guys. It was incredible how much it moved. It was going in where those wolves were. Remember?
Oh, you saw a wolverine on that trip?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh.
It was running from miles away. And I first thought it was like a bear, and it was like running for a couple miles, just right to where those wolves were. It got right into where those wolves were and was down in wherever that kill was.
Yeah, I've seen one lynx and one wolverine. I hope to grow those numbers.
Do you have any trail cameras in Alaska at your fish shack?
I have, not currently. I really should. Just right now, unfortunately, I don't. I'm going to plaster that place next time I'm up there.
Would that be a hard landscape to, like, have game walk within 10 feet of
an
area?
Oh, no. When I had one in there, it was just, I got tons of images.
Of what?
There's deer and bears that walk right by the porch.
Martin, black bears, blacktails.
Mink.
Predominantly, yeah. It's a great place to have them out. I just right now don't, and I know right where. I have some good spots where I want to put them, and I'll get some wolf pictures and stuff. Here's a good story. I don't want to get too specific because I don't want to get this particular TSA person in trouble.
And I don't want to ruin a good... This is a cool thing.
It's a great system. I don't even want to name the state.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to name the state.
No, it's a good call.
Well, it's similar to what we heard a lot of people do at that... I think wasn't it the Denver show that we did a long time ago? And
they wouldn't let people in with their knives.
Yeah, and so everybody started stashing knives, and they'd go to a rock or was it a downspout?
Downspouts. People are putting. The guy goes to put his knife in a downspout, and there's already something in there.
I love this.
I buried one out. I was somewhere with my wife or another, and they wouldn't let me have my knife, and I just buried it in a tree well. You know, like how they put the trees on the sidewalk.
Yeah,
I just buried it under the wood chips there and went and got it later. This guy says he's going through TSA in an unnamed state, and forgets he has a bench made in his pocket. And the lady says, "Well, go hide it. ceiling. Go hide it in the drop ceiling of the bathroom."
The coolest TSA agent ever.
He says 3 weeks later, he's gone for 3 weeks, so he's departing. He's on a three-week trip, comes back 3 weeks later, and goes and lifts up that drop ceiling panel, and there's three knives up there.
That's like the downspout.
He said, "I found a knife and pulled it out. Nope, not mine, and put it back. Found another. Not mine again. And put that one back as well. Third try did the trick. I went home pleased."
It seemed like early on, TSA would, or no, it wasn't TSA. It was just like USPS would have like a box. Yeah. And TSA would be like, "Oh, right over there, there's a box, there's an envelope. Yeah. You can very quickly mail your item that you can't take with you back to yourself." But that's not around anymore.
Well, that'd be a great idea we should look into, man, is maybe like at
a side
our
business?
At our local airport,
mm-hmm.
like a charitable thing where we have a little kiosk so you can mail your knives to yourself.
That would be good.
You'd get a lot of action.
Clay and I were going, flying somewhere, I think maybe up to BC, and he had a knife you could have sword fought with in his shaving kit. And they got
that
us.
Does, how come that yeah. doesn't surprise me?
So yeah. classic. And, right next to his coffee table book.
In Fayetteville. But it was in Fayetteville. And they let us call Misty to come pick it up. And we'd been somewhere else. They'd just confiscated it.
Sure.
Took us out back and shot us. But
because it was so long.
Well, no, they, yeah. They'll, you know, it depends how early you are. But you always have the option to retreat and go do something with it. Or you'll run down and get in your check bags, but if they can't pull it up, you just got to ditch them.
Yeah, everything.
I was with Cal.
Now, a pistol,
oh,
different deal.
Yeah, my buddy got, I got a couple buddies who got in a lot of trouble over pistols. Yeah. I told my one buddy, I said, man, if you got a pistol in your bag that you don't know about, they should shoot you in the leg with that pistol. Like, how do you have a pistol you forgot about in your check bag?
Yeah.
He had some whole elaborate story to explain it, but I'm like, how do you lose track of pistols?
Flies, buddy of mine flies to Vegas. All wearing this coat that he's got on, they're coming back home, and then something goes off in his pocket, and he's got two 22 rounds in his pocket, and man, it was like cavity search and everything.
Yeah, I had to do
but
that.
It was the same. He went out there; it was never detected when he was coming back. It was in there.
When I had a shotgun shell on me, their attitude was, "You dumbass!" It was like, now we got to do all this stuff, I said, man, we were ptarmigan hunting and blah, blah, blah. And their attitude was very much, I get it. Obviously, you're not going to try to take the plane down with a shotgun shell.
Right.
But now we got to do all this dumb stuff. And it's really irritating that you carried that shotgun shell on here. And just bear with us. But you're really annoying.
You're causing us paperwork.
Yeah, it was kind of like, it was very much like, there was no like actual suspicion. It's like, oh, brother, now we got to go through the whole shotgun shell deal.
That was at the end. That was at the end of the shift. Those folks were hot. They were trying to go home.
When my buddy got, when my buddy had his pistol, he winds up needing to go to court. You know, and he gets a very like, after everything came out, he gets a very lenient deal, and he says to his, he whispers to his lawyer, "Ask about the gun." His lawyer says, "Forget the gun.
You're not getting it back."
Oh man.
A guy wrote a very spirited thing about my theory on the morality in Cormac McCarthy being naive and juvenile. I'm not going to read that. Another guy wrote in.
Oh, come on, Steve.
It's just a lot. It's like I studied literature in school. He's rather pedestrian and short-sighted. He says, sure, some of his later, more obvious works, yes, but it's not. But my theory does not hold up to his earlier works. And then, no. That's a fair point. Old-timey sayings, guy wrote in, because I was trying to get that saying going, a fresh set of eyes, always find more beans. He says, man, me and my buddy's got a lot of those. Always leave a log for the next camper.
That's good.
Some are dumb. Got to give a pisser some space.
No.
Never judge a game by its box. That's for people that don't read. Some I don't get. When two fur traders throw down, they get naked.
You used one today I've never heard.
Sometimes the sheriff's got to shoot his deputy.
That is wild.
Moss is unclimbable. What did I say today?
You said he had his lipstick on, which I assume
lipstick
is,
out.
Lipstick out, which I assume is like about, sure. I assume that's like people use it about dogs.
About dogs?
I assume that's like when people mostly use it about dogs.
Sure, yeah.
I'd never heard that, though.
You know what else?
I got what you were saying, though. Like it picked up very quickly.
You know what else? If I had to go to one of those things where you trip, you know? Mm-hmm. To try to find out what's deep in your mind. I remember when I was a little boy, man, coming running in the house. We had this dog, Bobo, this rabbit dog, Bobo, coming in the house. Bobo's guts are hanging out. Bobo. Oh, last thing, then we're going to be done. This pisses me off. Oh, no, there's two things that are good. This one burns me up. Listen, when we had Evan Felker on from Turnpike Troubadours, and we were talking about him and the Bird Hunters, which is a beloved song, it's a great song, and I'm talking with Evan Felker about the fact that he throws out that the guy's holding a Belgian-made Browning.
Yep.
And I said to him, as a songwriter, I like these little references. Do you worry, though, that a reference might be over people's head? And I bring up, there's a Luke Combs song where he says that the guy has a Johnson outboard. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying, like, when you select that, it's the guy doesn't have a Honda outboard. That's different. It's like you're setting the scene. It's like he's got a Johnson outboard. He's an older fella. He's got an outboard that's not even made anymore. It takes a certain amount of effort to keep the old thing running. It's just a different, you know. He doesn't say he's got a four-stroke Honda. That's like not the guy.
Right.
It's this guy that's like loyal to his wife, right, whatever. And he's got this old-ass motor. So you're setting a, you're using a detail, setting a scene, and I was pointing out that you do that, and it might be that 60, 70, 80% of listeners don't know. To bring it back to Cormac McCarthy saying that someone rode ahead with the horn of fire. How many people read that and never, ever, ever know what he's talking about?
Yeah, but the people that know...
love it.
You're like, fan for life, man.
Talking to me.
So yep, you got it. Yeah, so I brought up to Evan Felker that that idea about these little details that mean a lot to a handful of people, but you run the risk of it being over people's heads. And then multiple guys write in being like, can't believe Steve didn't see the significance of a Belgian-made Browning. That's not what I was talking about. I wasn't throwing myself in with those people. I was just saying that there's a risk,
right,
of being too esoteric. That I appreciate the risk taker. Take that, Andrew and Jan.
Hey, wait a minute. Let me add my let me add my nephew to that list. Matthew, my nephew Matthew. He works for ICE down in Louisiana.
For ICE, like the drink?
Nope. For customs.
Oh.
He says, I just finished listening to Evan Felker interview on Meteor. And Ranella actually gave him some crap about mentioning that Belgian-made Browning.
Oh, I did not. No. My old man, listen, my old man had what he always said was a Belgian-made Browning, and then we looked up the serial number, it was not a Belgian-made Browning.
So where was it made?
Huh?
Where was it made?
It must have been a Model 11.
Where'd they move him to? I don't know. It just wasn't. He always said it was actually my mom's dad's. It was my maternal grandfather's auto loader that somehow my dad claimed... I don't even know who the hell's got it now. It's my mom's dad's goose gun, and my dad, I said, that's a Belgian-made Browning. It's a Belgian-made Browning.
So that was 20 minutes before we started this, so I took a picture of him, of you, and sent it to him while you were on your computer. I said, you want me to punch him? He said, I think you have to.
Listen, dude, his name's not Jan, is it?
No, it's Matthew.
Listen, this guy's got the bottom, Steve, he even said, Andrew says, that's the great thing about music. It paints a different picture for every
this
listener.
This guy says, right. The Belgian-made Browning reference in the song The Bird Hunters was to signal to those in the know... Dude, you're playing checkers and I'm playing chess, buddy. I know.
Steve doesn't play chess, though.
Well, you know, right. metaphorical chess. I know that. Sons of bitches.
Yeah, we must have just not done a great job explaining it in the moment. That's all it is.
It's like that kind of specificity in songs that like grounds something to reality. And like even if you don't understand the reference, it still feels like, I don't know, more relatable and universal.
John Prine does a lot of that stuff.
Chess, you ready for a Chetiquette?
Sure.
We're done, but we're not done.
I feel, though, a lot of people nowadays, could be wrong, don't actually really listen to the lyrics. The radio songs, you could be mumbling and have a good backbeat and stuff, and it could be a number one hit.
Oh, yeah. I listen to them lyrics, man.
I do, too.
Bad.
That's what I like.
Bad listen to them. Hard.
I know.
I don't listen to the lyrics of a song until I've heard it like 20 times. I'm like
a
music head
first.
That's why
I listened to it 20 times.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm on more like 20 years. Like, what's the song where he leaves to go to the bathroom and he comes back to bed, someone's taking his place?
That's Paul Simon?
Cecilia,
oh, no,
right?
Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah. Cecilia, yeah.
Yeah, forever.
I
thought that she was shaking his coffin daily. And then Jennifer's like, what are you saying? No, he's shaking his confidence. I was like, oh.
Shaking his coffin daily. Wake up.
I'm a big lyric guy, man.
You know, I've talked about this before, but I haven't talked about it for years, so I can talk about it again. I once read that, remember when Diamond Dave left Van Halen?
No.
I don't.
Yep.
And they brought in Sammy Hagar?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not the dog on Sammy, but it was a horrible day.
Wasn't the same.
Yeah. So Van Halen, Diamond Dave left Van Halen and actually went on to become an EMT. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
Yeah, he became an ambulance guy just because he wanted to serve people a little bit better. So this leads to one of my favorite quotes of all time, too. Anyways, so Van Halen ditched Diamond Dave. What was his last name?
Talking about,
I'm blanking on it.
Good gosh.
People are screaming at their stereo.
David
right
Lee
now.
Roth.
Yes. Yeah. Van Halen ditched Diamond David Lee Roth and hired Hagar. And then later, Hagar got fired from Van Halen. So I remember I was listening to Howard Stern, and Howard Stern was interviewing Diamond Dave about Hagar's departure from Van Halen. And Diamond Dave said, you know, the sun's going to shine again for Sammy. He's got that beautiful place in Hawaii. He's got his family. And Diamond Dave says, but what do I know about losing a high-profile career? But Hagar supposedly would get his lyrics by misunderstanding other lyrics. And then he'd find out what they were actually saying, and he would just make his lyrics what he thought they were saying, which is a great move. But I don't, and I said this before, I don't know how that leads to I Can't Drive 55.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Or Mas Tequila. But still. Last one. Oh, no, two ones. Chester, here's a Chetiquette for you. Ready for this?
I haven't read it, but yep.
Well, I'm going to read it to you. I work with a guy who owns a crap load of land. That's like a hectare. Huge hunter. Last night, a friend of his asked him if he can bring his 12-year-old grandson out to kill a doe. No bucks, just looking for a doe for his first year. Guy says, no problem. Sends him to a blind, confirms, does only. Even says he can shoot a couple does. Just don't shoot the bucks. Kid kills the biggest buck on the farm. Mm. What would you do?
I would definitely, oh man, that's tough. I'd let the kid know that he messed up and he can never hunt here again. I mean, it's...
Well, the kid or the grandpa?
I mean, both.
How old's the kid?
The kid needs 12, a lesson.
12 years old.
I'd leave the kid out of it.
Oh, yep.
Well...
That's the grandpa's problem.
I don't know. I mean, sure, could be.
It's the grandpa's problem. Yeah. I have a 12-year-old. Well, I had one a year ago, and I'll have one in a year. Gotcha. It's the grandpa's problem.
Yeah.
They don't know. Little kids.
Yeah, but
it's the grandpa's problem. How old's your kid?
He's way too young to hunt or talk.
Well, how old is he?
He's a year.
Okay, in 11 years, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but what if the kid?
The grandpa's problem.
So I would have certainly had a conversation with my 12-year-old daughter about what the parameters were about the hunt that we were getting into. I'm not saying I'm gonna be like, damn it, girl, you fucked up. No, like, I'm not going to do that. But, I mean, obviously, like, beforehand, you had a conversation about what you were going to go there and do.
Someone needs to talk to that kid. It's the grandpa's problem. It's not that kid's problem.
Yeah, I 100%
agree. You send your kid to school with some drugs, and then tell me who gets in trouble. You or the kid.
I don't think that's a good analogy.
No. I mean.
You.
Yeah, that's true.
I think there needs to. It's the grandpa's problem and the kid's problem, too. Like, the kid pulled the trigger. We don't know the story. How much pressure was there from the grandfather to shoot that buck? The kid could have really wanted to shoot a buck. I remember when I was 12 years old, like, I wanted to shoot things, man. Mm-hmm. Like, a big buck? Holy cow.
Yeah, the context is not there. I mean, did he wake grandpa up?
Yeah, did the grandpa not see that the gun was trained on a buck?
Yeah, you got one? Oh, my gosh.
So, I think there needs to be a swift talking to both of these fellas that they messed up. I wouldn't let them take the deer.
Really?
No.
Whoa.
Because you gave him permission to hunt.
That's hard etiquette right there, man. You can tell he didn't sleep all night.
Dude, you're a nice guy. You're letting him hunt your property. You can say shoot as many does as you want, but please don't shoot a big buck. And then the guys come shoot a big buck. They don't get to hunt the place again. You take the buck and you let them know they messed up.
Mm-hmm. Boom, boom.
It's like, oh, it's fine. You guys shot the biggest buck on the property, you know. Come back whenever. Shoot those.
Come back at night when I'm asleep.
Okay, there's one more. It's about stream access law. This is a good one. As we are aware, this is someone writing in. As we are aware, Montana stream access law is below historic high water level. It's you're kind of right. Mean high water. And if you stay below that, you are free to wander. Not free, he says free to wander. He's free to wander. Meaning, on a in Montana, just for you listeners not in the state of Montana, which is the vast majority of you, if you're in Montana and you're on what's regarded as a navigable stream, so that there's a history of navigation on that waterway, you can walk below the average high water mark. Meaning, if it's in a drought, you might be walking across dry ground, but you kind of stand down on the gravel bars and, you know, below the bank.
Yeah. If anybody, you know, pays attention to it, you can see where that high water mark is. There's usually a brush line from high water. You stay below that. You stay on the rocks. Easy to tell.
If you're walking on if you're stepping on a cottonwood tree root, you're probably not in you're above it.
Sometimes,
you're walking on a gravel bar, you're probably below it.
Sometimes those cottonwood roots, though, however, go underneath.
Yeah, that wasn't a good one, but you follow me.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of, I don't know. You know
but you're good.
If you're up in the grass, you're probably out of it. If you're down in the gravel barn, little, you know, willow patches all full of sediment, and you can see where spring runoff has blown all kinds of brush and trees around, and you're walking down in there, you're good. So this is a common thing. He climbs in the river channel at a public access. He climbs in the river channel at a bridge, walks through private ground using stream access to access public, and he's scouting for deer. Finds some good sign of deer, and he says, sweet, I'm going to get to this public by walking the public access. Game warden says,
there's some legality things.
Yep, can't do that.
You have to be fishing.
You can't use the stream access law to get to
hunting ground. Yep. I've heard some gray area stuff with this.
Yep. Different wardens interpret it different ways, but let me tell you the fail-safe way to do it. Make a couple casts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make a couple casts on your way in. Make a couple casts on your way out.
Yeah, you have a fishing rod with you.
You have right of access.
And I have done this a lot, actually. But it's actually a fishing trip, too. Like, I'll fish my way into a spot, camp, hunt, and fish my way out the next day.
I've talked to a game warden about this, and where he winds up having trouble with people is they'll do that and they'll get into a position where he's like, there is no way they're retrieving that game.
Because they run onto private?
He's just like, so you're telling me, and I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing, you're going to get that in the water there and drag that deer back up this river.
Oh, well, I'm floating.
Why wouldn't you just quarter it and walk it out?
That's what he expressed to me. He clarifies with someone, I just want to be clear, this is the plan.
Yeah.
When you get one,
yeah,
you're going to come in the way you got out of it.
You're not going to trespass the whole way back to the truck.
Yeah, and that's his deal. And he says, I now know see someone that, like, they don't have any, they haven't thought through how they're going to do this, and that's what I clarify with them.
There's also the same deal with floating, because some of these spots you can float in, and technically you have to be fishing too, even when you're floating, to access
the ground. Yeah,
is what I've,
because your fishing trip turned into a hunting trip. Fish your way down, then be like, oh wow, I'm gonna go up there and hunt for a minute.
So there's no law, you can't, like, is it You're not limited to archery equipment or something while you're fishing?
Nothing to do with that, no. You just got to have a Snoopy rod, take a couple casts.
Roger that.
I mean, some areas in these things are like weapons restricted, so you have to be careful with that. But
that's
different thing.
That's totally unrelated. All right, Tales from the Tour Bus. Right here. Thanks, everybody, for joining. Brent, thanks for coming out. How's things going with your show?
Oh, really good. Really good. It's been such a joy. I get a lot of feedback from folks, and just everybody's enjoying it. Met a guy, walked in the door up here, some guy that works here. He's originally from Mississippi, and he's up here working at the Folly Theater?
The venue for tonight?
Mm-hmm.
This Country Life fan?
I always say he loves it. Said he never misses it, so.
Ah, congratulations.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, it is good to hear.
Thank you for the platform. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. All right, everybody. Have a good whatever. Get a tape measure. Keep it with your trail. Keep it in your trail cam bag.
That would come in handy with that hog.
Oh. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. The Sport Dog promise to consumers is simple. Gear the way you'd design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter.
I've used that Sport Dog collar in different temperatures. It just doesn't stop working.
Get 20% off your first purchase using code MEATEATER. So go to www.sportdog.com/MEATEATER to learn more.